Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. The judge has delayed his decision on a defense request to dismiss all charges against Donald Trump after the prosecution rested. After today's court session, the defendant.
There were no crimes. We did nothing wrong. And I want to get back to campaigning. I'm representing millions and millions, hundreds of millions of people.
The prosecutor says evidence supporting a crime is overwhelming. Seeking arrest warrants for leaders of Israel and Hamas, including Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, over the Gaza war, the head of the International War Crimes Court in the Netherlands. President Biden and others rejecting the court's assertions. At a Jewish American Heritage Month event at the White House, VP Harris's husband, Doug Emhoff.
We cannot live in fear. We cannot be afraid. We must always raise our voices and live openly and proudly as Jews.
The TSA is seeing some of the highest passenger travel numbers in its history right now, it says. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WLAK News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WLAK website at lakeair.radio.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin Republicans are stressing party unity after this weekend's state convention in Appleton. U.S. Senate candidate Eric Hovde.
To the old guard, welcome the new guard. They bring new energy, new ideas. We need them to refresh our party. And to the new guard, be respectful of the old guard. They have worked tirelessly for this party, not only for years, but for decades.
Delegates elected Terry Dittrich and Pam Travis to the Republican National Committee. Travis helped submit a false slate of electors for Donald Trump 3.5 years ago. Wisconsin unemployment is down to less than 3%. That's more than a full percentage point under the national average. The number of jobless people statewide went down about 1,300 since last month. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. The Duluth Air Show over the weekend brought in a great deal of revenue for the Twin Port cities. According to a WDIO report, officials say the air show typically brings about $20 million into the local economy, thanks to bringing about 50,000 people into the area for the show. Attendance at the air show has been increasing to record levels over the past few years, which organizers credit to increased interest in the show and lucky weather. This year's event saw a few clouds, but plenty of people still attended the show. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources has announced the creation of the Spongy Moth Resource Center. According to a press release, the Resource Center is part of an effort to give residents the latest information on the spread of the invasive moths, as well as how to identify and dispose of them. In the Northwest region, officials are using crop dusters to lay down insecticides in areas where spongy moths have grown out of control throughout May and June. Residents should dispose of all spongy moths they see. And that's what you need to know. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
The Brewers come up short in Houston. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers lost 9-4 to the Astros, coming up short 2-1 in the series. Milwaukee pitcher Colin Ray giving up 4 runs in the first inning alone. Manager Pat Murphy.
Colin didn't have his best game, but at the same time, you know, he battled and gave us a lot of innings. You know, he battled, and the 5 that he gave us were crucial. We didn't do a good job after that, but 2 home runs hurt us badly.
The Crew are now in Miami to face the Marlins tonight. NFL, OTAs get underway tomorrow in Green Bay. Voluntary workouts. Matt LaFleur asked how Jordan Love is doing heading into year 2 as the starter.
I think it just shows how far he's come, his maturity level, and really kind of taking the reins, taking ownership of this team. And he's been fantastic throughout the course of the offseason. And, you know, that's kind of what we expect from him.
That's Packers head coach Matt LaFleur. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Cloudy tonight, scattered showers and thunderstorms, and a low near 60. Some strong storms tomorrow with pockets of heavy rain, flood watch in effect, a high in the low 70s. Still a chance of rain Wednesday, breezy and 70. Sunshine returns for Thursday, high mid-70s. Right now it's 73.
I love my kids so much. I once sat for 3 hours in the cold rain to watch her soccer team lose by 18 goals.
I love my kids so much. I once used a tube to suck snot out of her stuffed nose at 3 a.m.
You win.
Love your kids? Love them enough to make sure they're in the right car seat. From toddlers to tweens, visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat to find the right seat for their age and size. Keep them safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
The Todd Alba Show.
Trumpster asked the judge and said, hey, can I not come to court because I want to go to my son's graduation? So here now, from the Raw story, Trump plans Minnesota fundraiser on the day of Barron's graduation. When I graduated, you have a get-together with family and friends. It's kind of a day. A parent shouldn't just be ducking in and out.
You have to be a parent for that. And he is a parent in name only. A pino.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, 10:33, the award-winning Civic Media's own Terry Barr. 11 o'clock hour, we learn all about the Honor Flight and how you can get involved. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
There it is, Busted Pencils Monday, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education right away. 855-752-4842. Just to remind people, Johnny Lupinacci. You know, sometimes I forget you're on, you know, if you're out there, you're driving in your car, you're like, I forgot the number. I want to call them tonight. Well, if you're going to call us tonight, make sure 855-752-4842. If you're watching on the Twitter feed, you can text us. If you're on the Facebook feed, if you're on the YouTube, man, there are so many ways to get
Civic
in touch
Media
with us.
App.
And I was going to say, Johnny, don't forget about the Civic Media app, because, you know, when you got the Civic Media app, all is well. As we said, our friends in Finland wouldn't go anywhere without the Civic Media app, you know, because Johnny's like, oh,
our school's hilarious, Tim. I was just chatting with a few of the Finnish teacher educators today. But also, you can chop it up and you can have these discussions, especially if you're in Madison. You can head down to the Minocqua Brewing Company and have these kinds of conversations. Busted Pencils is sponsored by the Minocqua Brewing Company, who sued the state of Wisconsin to end its parasitic voucher system that hurts public schools. Minocqua Brewing Company is making Wisconsin great again, one beer at a time. Check out MinocquaBrewingCompany.com to see where you can buy their progressive beer. And the last time I was in town, I got to actually be in person with one of our regular guests here with us tonight. But Tim, give us an introduction, because
it's a Monday. It's the third Monday. That's Wisconsin Public Education Network. It is their regular time, always leading the pack. Heather Du Bois Bernays, she's there making sure, but she brought a special guest today. We're going to talk about this. I just want to, you know, hey, we are going to delve deep into critical issues facing public education. Tonight, we are focusing on the dire financial straits of Wisconsin public schools. Despite an increase in state funding, districts grapple with significant budget cuts, leading to painful cuts. Our guest is Christopher Saldana, an assistant professor of K-12 education, leadership, and policy analysis at UW-Wisconsin-Madison, whose research sheds light on the intricate relationship between school finance and educational opportunity. Chris, Heather, welcome to Busted Pencils. How are you both? Chris, you first.
I'm good. Thanks for having me. It's really exciting to get to talk about these issues that I think are super important to educate kids.
And Heather, we're going to let you. Are you going to lament this being a Monday, or are you going to come on and go like, I got this Monday, Tim?
It is a Monday, but we got this. I'm really glad that Chris is here to join us tonight. I'm excited to dig into some of the many reasons why it's necessary for us to have a regular slot on this show, because there is just so much going on with Wisconsin public schools. And Tim, I got to fact check you right out of the gate. We didn't really get an increase to school funding in Wisconsin, because for the 16th year in a row, we don't even have a budget that keeps pace with inflation. And even though more dollars went in, so much of that went to private and charter schools that public schools are just left with the crumbs like usual. Mm. And I'm just going to drive this point home, but if it doesn't keep pace with inflation, it's not an increase, it's a cut. So let's call it what it is.
Thank you, Heather. That's why you're on the show every third Monday to make sure the fact check me, because, you know, I play loose with the facts. That's what we do here. No, we don't, Johnny. But you
that's
know,
what I we wanna... do when we turn it over to AI and Tim gets the reins.
No, because the technicality, though, is what I put out there is true. What Heather's pointing out, though, which is the reason for why we are having another show like this tonight and having a guest like Christopher Saldana is because school finance is murky, is weird. We don't know. Somebody tells us one day we're going for cuts. The next day somebody says it's the historic investment ever that has ever been given by any state at any time. And my neighbor, going to talk about it, my neighbor has had it, does not know what they're voting for, never understands whether or not they should be voting yes or no. They don't understand why they have to vote yes or no, because every month they pay their taxes the way they're supposed to. All of this, Chris, okay, public education, school finance 101, as best you can. How do we get to the point, how do we fund public schools? And let's just say we're in Wisconsin. In Wisconsin, a student goes to public schools. The average, we typically talk about this, how much it costs to educate a student in the year, okay? And we hear a certain number. That number, where does that money come from? How do we get there?
That's a great question. So part of the way that schools are funded, there are three streams usually, and I'll try to make this as simple as possible. And I know we only got an hour, so I won't take any long.
Well, my neighbor's going to not listen unless you get to it, Chris, because he's got stuff to do, man.
That's right. Historically, schools have been funded by local property taxes. So that's where the vast inequity comes from, is the fact that we have such great differences in the wealth that exists in different communities. Over the course of time, states and the federal government have started to chip in, but they have not chipped in anywhere near where they need to get to the point of offering every kid anywhere in this country the opportunities that they should be afforded. What often happens is that kids who live in wealthy communities, who have wealthy parents, they get all of the educational opportunities that they need. They get the tutoring, they get the access to technology, they get the access to the highest, the most experienced and the highest qualified teachers. It's the students who live in the communities where poverty and racism is most concentrated that have the fewest opportunities. And those communities also have the least wealth. Mm. So when we place the burden on these communities to try to raise funds for their students' educations, there's only so much that they can do. And so when Heather talks about what the state's role is in educating students and funding public schools, it really is to provide that additional level of funding that will allow communities that don't have access to the wealth that other communities do to do things like hire experienced teachers that are qualified, to hire counselors.
Let me ask this question, Chris, so too, just right there. If we're going to think about it in pots of money, so local taxes, what you're saying, and so I have $100,000 house, a percentage of my house is then thrown into the local public schooling. And so then what you're talking about then the number of houses in a district and the wealth of those houses then calculates into, that's the local contribution then. And so I think the way you explained that then, Chris, is to say, and so you can imagine in communities that have big million-dollar mansions, exactly, and in communities that might have very low home ownership, then the local contribution is wildly different. Yes. Wildly different.
Yes. And if you think about the percentage of a million-dollar home, the wealthiest communities can tax themselves at much lower rates. They don't have to have these exorbitant tax rates to be able to fund public schools. They can have very low tax rates and do much more than communities that have that have less wealth. They have to tax themselves more and they can't even get anywhere near what the wealthy communities have.
Okay. Yeah. Just want to get that just so we understand. And so that right away, then, as you said, is that it's a disparity right off the bat because we're basing that. Okay. Okay. Now, what are you talking about the state and Heather's, you know, always whining about the state not doing the work they're supposed to do? So Heather, I'm sorry. I just, you know.
So there's no lie there. I'm always whining about that. 24/7. It's all I whine about.
I think maybe the best way to talk about the state's role is to give you a hypothetical example. You have three different school districts. One school district is very poor, and they are contributing to their local schools through local property taxes, but they can't get to the amount of money that they would need to be able to educate kids in the way that the state requires, right? The state imposes on every single school district within it some expectations, some standards. They say you have to educate your kids and they have to be able to pass, in our current system, standardized test scores, and they have to be able to meet these standards. So this very poor school district puts in some money from the example that we talked about. Taxpayers are paying there, but they can't raise enough. And then you have on the other side of the spectrum, a very wealthy school district that doesn't need any help whatsoever. They have enough money in their local community to put in all of the dollars that they need to provide all of the resources that their kids need so that their kids can meet all of the expectations that are placed upon them by the state. And then you have maybe one district that's somewhere in between, right? They can kind of get close to the bar in terms of the amount of money that they would need to provide the kinds of resources that they need for their kids. What the state's role is thought of today in terms of policy is that the state is supposed to provide to fill the gap, right? We talked about the low income district. They couldn't make it all the way to the amount of money that they would need to meet the state's standards. And so the state comes in and fills in whatever money the local community isn't able to raise. And that's kind of their role. They're supposed to provide that additional funding, and they're supposed to be consistent over the course of time, right? This is a constitutional standard. Every state within the United States has within their constitution some provision that says we need to provide kids with this standard of education. And then with that, they have to meet it. The problem is that in order for us as citizens to find out whether the state is meeting it, it involves litigation, it involves constant checks, right? We can kind of do the eye test and we can say our kids aren't doing well, what's going on? And then everyone starts to point fingers. And I teach a resource allocation class, and I don't know if you've ever seen the Spider-Man meme where all the Spider-Men are pointing at each other, right? Mm-hmm. That's the kind of stuff that happens in public education, is that everybody starts pointing fingers at everyone. But really, it is the state's constitutional responsibility to provide public education for every kid within its borders, right? Wherever those kids come from, whatever languages those kids speak, whatever disabilities they may have, whatever their socioeconomic status may be, the state has made a promise, a commitment, that they will provide public education at a high quality and so that it's free for every kid within its state.
It's Busted Pencils Fully Leaded Education Talk, Wisconsin Public Education Network, third Monday. And our guest, of course, Heather is here, and Dr. Chris Saldana, University of Wisconsin-Madison, helping us figure this out because, man, my neighbor came in and said, Tim, when you get the show going tonight, make sure he helps explain what's coming out of my pocket and what needs to go. Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk. Hey, if you have a question, give us a call. Make sure you understand. We want to know. Busted Pencils, School Finance 101 when we get back.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute with a couple quick thoughts about boosting your credit score. The most important thing you can do is paying your bills on time. But I've got a way you can make your payments even on timer. Each month, set up not one, but two evenly spaced automatic payments so that your credit balance is always as low as possible. You're not going to pay more. You're just paying the same amount in two smaller hits to keep the card's overall balance low. This guarantees that whenever the credit bureaus check in on how much credit you're using, they're going to see you using an almost ridiculously low amount of your credit limit. The bureaus like this, and then they bump up your credit score. So set that extra auto payment up each month and let's give your credit score a boost. Okay, folks, that was your Work Money Minute. Go to workmoney.org for more tips or text MONEY to 88285. Till next time, I'm Carrie Joy saying take good care.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
Conversation work. You hear us coming back. Busted pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking. Education, the numbers 855-752-4842. School Finance 101, Wisconsin Public Education Network. Heather, she's here, and special guest, Dr. Chris Saldana, University of Wisconsin, Madison, assistant professor at leadership, talking to us, helping us get through this whole thing, school financing, so we can really get to, quote, the facts. We were messing around in there. Heather was saying, you know, don't let the facts get in the way of the truth, putting it out there, going, okay, is it a historic investment? Is it actually an underfunding? And we got to get at this to truly understand. And I said, you know, my neighbor, let me talk about this. You all have a neighbor who's trying to figure this out and wanting to know, you know, and especially the neighbor who's going like, I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do. I love my public schools. I want to make sure that things are happening. So, Chris, you were talking about saying, OK, so right away, my neighbor who owns real estate is paying a percentage of that part. And that goes to their contribution. And then but the number that we're trying to get to, though, as you're saying, is set by a bar of an expectation of saying, here's what a great education in Wisconsin should look like, and then here's how much it will cost. Then based on how much it will cost, taxpayers, here's how much you got it to. And then when it doesn't get to the full amount, the state's responsibility, let's not even call it a responsibility, the reality, the law, the Constitution says, state, you come in and fill in the rest if we don't get there, because every student, every child in the state of Wisconsin, according to the Constitution that you all legislators are holding up and enforcing, is that yours to make up the difference. Okay. And then, Chris, does it ever happen that the legislature doesn't live up to their promise?
Once in a while. Yeah. Okay. I think more often than not, that's usually. Oh, and it's interesting because we're talking about Wisconsin, but this is really a national problem.
Yeah.
States all around the country, they try to avoid this issue of funding public schools. They constantly do it over and over and over. And I think Heather mentioned this at the very beginning, the cost of public education has skyrocketed. Mm. And this is because we now do a better job, for example, of educating kids. That's just one aspect of it. But we now also do a better job of identifying kids with disabilities, right? In the fact where we didn't, and we serve them better. We now do a better job of serving kids who don't speak English. We provide them with greater programs and resources. And the thing that I think folks who criticize how much schools spend often neglect is that schools are a human-centered organization and institution, right? We need people in schools to educate kids. And it just so happens that paying personnel is expensive, right? You can't put in a machine or a computer to create and foster the kind of learning environments that skilled teachers can create. So it's just one of those things that is continuing to rise in costs, and that funder or that the state funding mechanisms haven't kept pace with.
Johnny Lupinacci, jump in there.
I love being here as a listener, as a learner, as somebody, you know, cheering this on, because I couldn't agree more with, you know, always what Heather's bringing to the show, but also Dr. Saldana tonight. What a great guest we have for our listener out there who's like, hold on, wait, it's a constitutional responsibility for states to fund schools? But then I keep hearing about all these underfunded schools. So now if I'm listening and you know, I'm rehashing this, because in our world, we experience this, like Dr. Saldana said, we experience this state to state, right? We're constantly negotiating, and too often begging for crumbs. And I think one of the last shows, Heather reminded us, like, let's stop asking for the bare minimum because it's just not enough. When we know we can do better, we ought to be funded and able to do better for all the children in our public schools. That's the function of a strong public school system, and it's the bedrock of a strong democracy. It is the strength of our nation to have all of our young people learning and learning well, to be all the diverse things they're going to grow up to be and contribute to our local economies and to our national identity. And yes, our national identity is a diverse one, right? And so having Dr. Saldana here explaining it and breaking it down, but also knowing his work, that it advocates for this kind of equity in education, right? And I'm coming back to this. It's a constitutional responsibility of a state to provide a quality and equitable education to all children, and that's not inexpensive, but that keeps getting farmed out. Like, states keep somehow getting to shirk out of funding that. And it's beyond frustrating, right? We're all pretty frustrated with it, fed up with it. But listener out there, you know, it likely then falls to you, right? It already is our responsibility in a democracy to contribute to the tax good of our states and our nation. And that those tax dollars then get dispersed, right, equitably, ideally. And we've seen too often not. School funding has not historically been fair or equitable. But in a perfect world, right, our state budget adequately funds our public schools, and those dollars come from, you know, a tax base. And it's a little bit more diverse than just individual tax on our, you know, on our state income or our sales tax, but I'm simplifying it. But yet there's been a historical shift and a move, right? To say, let's move away from the state funding it as much. In fact, they've reduced how much they've given percentage wise, and then put it on local communities to say, well, if you want good, strong public schools, it's up to you. And I think that's been divisive. And Tim, I think when you talk about your neighbor, that's where your neighbor is like, wait, what, aren't I already paying taxes? Mm-hmm. I agree with that. Like, our state should be holding up its constitutional end, but yet they've kind of shirked out of that and shifted attention to individuals and saying, well, you know what, if you want your schools to be strong, it's up to you. So we'll put you in this position to sort of ask for money locally.
I think there's two major policy changes that the state has made that are directly related to public education. One is, you all have already mentioned it, the shift towards school choice,
yep,
the voucher movement. One thing that state policymakers have tried to do is to say, we aren't going to adequately fund your public schools, but we'll give you a choice. And if you want to exit them, then here you go. Here's your ticket to be able to get out of public schools. And then the other thing, Johnny, when you're talking about the tax structures, right? Even when you think about the nature of state taxes and the nature of local taxes, we've talked a lot about property taxes. State taxes are usually funded in more progressive ways, right? Things like income taxes, right? It's usually the most wealthiest folks in a state that are contributing to the money that's going to the state that then gets redistributed to communities around the state. So in both instances, the state has just shirked its responsibility and just made it so that those with the least resources are being asked to do the most. Tim, you talk about your neighbor. It's true. They're paying their taxes. And then at the same time, they're being asked to do even more. And even in the gaps that they're filling with these referendum, this isn't getting kids to the kinds of education that they deserve. This is barely meeting minimums. Adequate is a baseline. It's not even close to what we want.
Man, Heather, where'd you find this guy, man? He's coming in here. Wisconsin Public Education Network Monday. Dr. Chris Saldana. Yeah, Heather Du Bois Renee bringing in a guest. Heather, we're going to get, you know, for the get to you, because you got some explaining to do where you found this guy here. But I tell you what, I can hear it in the background. I hear that. I know the music's going to say something about it. I don't want to be here anymore. We want you to be here more, though. More when we get back. Dr. Chris Saldana, we want you to be back. We want you to be here way more. See you in a minute.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The power is coming back on in southeast Wisconsin after a round of severe weather. We Energies reported about 4,000 homes and businesses without power during the worst of it this morning. Storms are forecast to possibly be even worse in southern Wisconsin and northern Illinois tomorrow. The leading Democrat in the Wisconsin Assembly says she thinks her party can take the majority this year. That would mean winning 52 seats.
It is a big lift for us to flip 15 seats in 1 year. No question. Do I think we're building the infrastructure to do it and have the candidates to do it? I do. I think it's entirely possible.
Representative Greta Neubauer told a WISP Politics luncheon last week that lawmakers will have to be more responsive to voters under new maps, no matter who wins. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. Two people were killed in a single vehicle crash in Polk County over the weekend. According to the Polk County Sheriff's Office, an ambulance found the crashed vehicle in a ditch off of State Highway 35 South in the village of Milltown. Authorities believe that the vehicle had crossed the center line before going into the ditch and hitting trees before rolling over. Both the driver and the passenger were pronounced dead at the scene of the crash. Authorities have not released the identities of the victims or what caused the crash. The city of Superior will host a public meeting on adding a new skate park to the area next week. According to a Facebook post from Superior Mayor Jim Payne, there will actually be two meetings next week, a public meeting on Wednesday at 5 p.m. and a kids-only design meeting on Thursday at the middle school. In the post, Mayor Payne praised the past efforts of skaters in getting a skate park built, saying their hard work landed Superior one of the coolest things that's ever been built in the city, and he wants to add a new one. And that's what you need to know. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
I'm Pete with the 60-second Showbiz Beat. Billy Zane is playing Marlon Brando in a new biopic called Waltzing with Brando. The film debuted at the Cannes Film Festival and is based on Bernard Judge's memoir, Waltzing with Brando, Planning a Paradise in Tahiti. Judge was recruited by the actor to design the first ecologically perfect retreat for the island Brando purchased in the South Pacific in the 60s. Brando most famously portrayed Vito Corleone in The Godfather and is a two-time Oscar winner. To combat the lack of original ideas coming from showbiz, this is the age of the reboot. The latest rebooting will be from TBS as they've announced a new version of Dinner in a Movie. The network says the reboot is due in part to a lack of material thanks to the writers and actor strike last year. So they are hoping more people will want to watch movies in their home. The original show was hosted by Paul Gilmartin and aired from 1995 to 2011. The reboot will be hosted by Jenny Mullen and American Pie's Jason Biggs. Just don't let him near the baked goods. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Cloudy tonight, scattered showers and thunderstorms, and a low near 60. Some strong storms tomorrow with pockets of heavy rain, flood watch in effect, a high in the low 70s. Still a chance of rain Wednesday, breezy and 70. Sunshine returns for Thursday, high mid-70s. Currently at 72 degrees.
The Todd Alba Show.
The fantastic Jane Matt Nair of Matt Nair on Air. I'm a big fan of like the Rose Bowl, the Orange Bowl, the Cotton Bowl. Well, now from Snoop Dogg, they're going to have the Snoop Bowl, the Snoop Bowl. How about that, Jane?
I think we're missing the obvious. Where's the Punch Bowl? Where's the Toilet Bowl? I think that there are other bowls that are being neglected.
I think it could maybe be the Snooper Bowl, though.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Earl Ingram.
Susan from Kenosha. Good morning to you, Susan. You say what?
I've been marching since I was 17. I'm 74. And women need to get out. You need to vote because you don't want to go back to 1950 where you weren't allowed a credit card, where you weren't allowed to purchase a car or a home. These are things that are at stake.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Todd Alba.
Hey everybody, join us next time as our friend and colleague Luke Mathers joins us for a Tuesday Tangent with Lukester. Be here.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Busted pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. And yes, it's Wisconsin Public Education Network Monday. Heather, where did you find this guy, this Dr. Saldana? Come on, get, you know, let us in on the secret. Where did you get him?
Yeah, I'd love to. I was just hanging out in a Zoom with a bunch of policy nerds like I do. And Dr. Saldana was invited to talk to us about the topic of adequacy in Wisconsin school finance. And I thought, oh, okay, here we go. You know, I was prepared for a bracing round of hearing the facts and getting bored out of my mind for an hour and then walking away. And he just brought the issue to light with such clarity and focus that I immediately followed up with a request if he could do a public version of the presentation that he made to that group, because we're always looking for someone who can get out of those weeds and into the heart of the matter and like explain, well, what does this mean for kids? What does this mean for communities? How does a disequalizing school finance structure actually impact the way we live our lives? And I just recognized right away that he had a really rare gift for explaining that in a way that makes sense to your neighbor, Tim, who's always, you know, come blaming the wrong person and pointing.
You're so cranky. Yeah, my neighbor's so cranky sometimes. I mean, you know, but that's why, yeah. So, Chris, Dr. Saldana, all right. So I think we're getting to the point where we understand taxes, real estate taxes, how that works and contributes to a number that we're supposed to get to, because that number that we're supposed to get to is driven by a standard that we set by saying, here's what we want from all kids, and here's the success level that we want from all kids in the state. And it's going to probably cost about this amount of money to get there, because we've decided that this is where we want to get to. And so I pay some real estate taxes, and then the state's responsibility. And again, that word responsibility makes it sound like, well, you know, they're very irresponsible. They're very irresponsible. How about no, you're breaking the law. You know, you're breaking the law. You're not irresponsible, okay? You're irresponsible when you don't put out the garbage the night before. You're irresponsible when you don't fill the sugar for the next morning for your mom when they're coming down to have coffee. You're breaking the law when you don't fund schools the way the Constitution of your state in Wisconsin says you're supposed to do. When that happens, then, Chris, we talk about this. And when the state breaks the law, is that then what triggers a referendum? Sometimes,
yes. Okay. And so part of what happens in Wisconsin is that many, many years ago, I think this was in the early 90s, we talked about how the costs of schools were rising, right? Teachers needed to be paid more because things were getting more expensive. Schools recognized that they needed to have more counselors, they needed to have more paraprofessionals. So the costs of schools were rising, and state legislators in the 1990s decided that they needed to do something about these rising costs, right? One way to think about them is, yes, this is good. We're doing better by our kids. Another way to think of them, which is the way that the state legislators thought about it in the 1990s, is that our schools are spending, and their spending is out of control. Right. And so they implemented this new law, this new policy called revenue limits. And what revenue limits are, they capped how much school districts could spend or how much revenue they could receive. It's essentially a spending cap, though. And that spending cap decides how much state funding and local funding school districts can receive. And so what referenda are is a request on the part of communities, of local communities, to say, of school districts, sorry, asking their communities, can we spend a little bit more than what our revenue limit is? Right. They are going to their communities, their voters, and begging to spend a little bit more because the amount of funding that they're getting currently isn't sufficient to meet the needs of their kids.
Begging to raise taxes on ourselves so that our kids have what they need. I mean, how desperate does it get? I mean, it's the most unethical way to do school finance. It really is.
Heather, and this is why, again, for Dr. Saldana to be on tonight is to help people understand too that why this does happen, and it feels like too on this one, it's like, okay, so man, it's back to us to make sure that the kids get what they need, because the legislature and the legislators have decided to do this by some kind of goofy kind of, you know, magic that they do. And then they turn it into, well, the schools are just out there drunken spending like sailors, you know, out there. And no, nothing's, that's BS, you know. And we sit there, and then you sit down, though, and I can see, though, too, that you take the point of view. So going back all the way back to where you started, Chris, then in wealthy districts, right, the ability then to tax themselves more or to put more in doesn't always happen, but they're much more able to. And then when you go to a community that's already putting in all as much as they can, and you're asking them for more, kind of when we had Say Yes to MPS, the Milwaukee Public Schools, people, and that too was just to provide funding for the essentials, nothing extra, but yet to fund the essentials, it still had to go back to the taxpayers to say to themselves, yes, we want to tax ourselves more because the legislature won't do their jobs.
That's exactly right. And I think there's one other thing that I think I should point out when we're talking about revenue limits and referenda is that many listeners will remember the Great Recession, the financial crisis that happened during 2008, 2009, and 2010. What the state legislators did during that period was to what's called decouple. So they removed this requirement that the revenue limits increase by the rate of inflation. And so that already, the amount of funding that states were going to, or that the state was going to put into public education, is already decoupled from what the actual needs are. So the costs have been rising, everything has been getting more expensive, and the state just hasn't contributed its part. And then when we think about districts, I think, Tim, the point that you made is a really important one to make, is that districts are different, right? And the state can say, well, it's up to you. You can decide if you want to spend more on public education, but some communities just don't have that wealth that they can just pull on. It's not like they live in the McMansions where someone can just pay a little bit more and it's not so much out of their pocket and then they're going to fund great schools. These are folks who, like your neighbor or like other folks around Wisconsin, are already doing their part and paying a huge amount out of their wallet. And then in many occasions saying, yes, I will pay even more to provide the funding that my schools need. But it really isn't a sustainable approach to funding public education. We really do need to have structures and systems in place that are going to provide state funding for public education.
Yeah, I love that. I love that, Dr. Saldana and Heather, both for this. Maybe you can speak to this. So where do we go from here? Like, what's the move? Because I'm sure a listener is probably like, man, I get it. This is clear. Yeah. What do we do about this?
I'm going to defer to Heather because I know the media is
doing a lot. I'd love to take this one. Yeah. You know, I mean, while we're pointing fingers at the state, let's just trace them all the way to the ballot box. We have the opportunity this summer, this fall, to go to the ballot box to vote on those school referenda to provide a stopgap solution, you know, put a Band-Aid on this bleeding wound for the districts that we live in. But we also have an opportunity to elect better leaders and people who are going to take that constitutional charge that they pledge when they take office more seriously and do right by our kids. And I don't care what letter they have behind their name, all of our elected officials need to prioritize that constitutional responsibility to making sure that our schools are providing an education that is as uniform as it can be across all of our schools. And right now, the entire system is set up to prevent that uniformity. The revenue limits are nuts. They don't correspond to student need either. You know, they were arbitrarily set 30 years ago, and they need to be revisited. We don't want to preserve that for the next 400 years. We want to fix this now. And our kids are only going to be kids right now, right? We time is not on our side and we have to move fast. So I encourage people to make an informed decision when they vote, but also to get involved locally. Find out why your district is going to referenda. Join a local group like the ones that work together through our network across the state and do what you can to educate communities, explain how this works to people because it's very confusing. But most of all, just put your votes where your passion is and do what's right for kids yourselves when you go to vote.
Man, thank you, Heather, for putting that out there like that. And you say, yeah, we do, you know, people have a choice. And the big choice that you point out here is at the ballot box. And you say not vote. I mean, the referendum is a choice at the ballot box, but the ballot box of going, okay, like, does your legislator, yours, your communities, do they follow the law? Do they uphold the law or do they break the law? Because if they're breaking the law, guess what? You have a choice to get them out of there, move them along, say, sorry. At a minimum, we have a minimum requirement here when we vote for legislators. And one of the minimum requirements are that they uphold the law. And so there, legislators out there across Wisconsin, across the country, if you're not doing your job in enforcing the law, making sure that the law is followed, if you are, you know, jumping, breaking the law, hey, oh, breaking the law, man, a little Judas Priest there, right? Yeah. You know, a little Dayton, breaking the law. It's just, hey, vote them out, man, because, and then this whole referendum talk maybe could be a whole different conversation, because the reality is that the reason we go to referendum, again, comes back to these legislators and the system they've set up. And Chris, right, you were talking about, we've got a system problem.
Yeah, I think Heather said it perfectly. Referenda are a Band-Aid, right? And this is a big, big wound. And referenda are a tiny little Band-Aid that kind of cover up this wound, when really what we need to be thinking about is how do we provide more funding for kids who are learning English, emerging bilinguals, which mm-hmm. the state does horribly. The state provides so little funding for kids who are learning English. The state provides so little funding for kids with disabilities and special education. I think that's one of the biggest problems, that if you ask school district administrators now, superintendents, principals, when you ask them what the biggest challenge is that they don't get enough funding from the state. And so now they're having to subsidize their own special education funding, or their own special education programs, which are programs that are federally required and state mandated, right? And they should be, right? We should be providing public education for kids with disabilities, but they now are pulling from kids in general education classrooms to provide for kids in special education. So that's how bad it's gotten, is that districts are pulling from every which way that they can to try to make do and provide for kids in their schools. And the sad part is that they're unable to do it. And it's for all kids, right? It's not just any particular kid within these school districts that are in the districts with the greatest needs. All of those kids within those school districts are having educational opportunities robbed from them.
Busted pencils, fully leaded education talk. 855-752-4842 is the number. Wisconsin Public Education Network Monday. Heather Dubois Bernane, Dr. Chris Saldana, University of Wisconsin Madison. Heather, I'm listening. My neighbor has just sent me a note saying, I need to find out more information. Where do I go?
You can go to wisconsinnetwork.org to find out more about all of this. Get links to the information you need to understand how school finance works. Look at our map and find the public education advocacy group nearest you and send them a note, join them, connect, get involved, get engaged. We also want to invite folks to join us this summer, July 30 to 31st, at our annual summer summit, where we're going to be bringing folks together from across the state who are sick and tired of being sick and tired of this and ready to do something about it. And we hope that Dr. Saldana will join us there too, and that you all can ask him your questions in person and find out what it's really going to take to move the dial on this, because it's going to take a lot more than, you know, just a few people understanding the problem. The problem isn't that we don't know what's wrong. The problem is there isn't the will to do what's right. And we can fix that. We can fix that immediately if we could force the will to.
Man, check it out, though. So in July, make sure everybody is heading out to the Wisconsin Public Education Network. Chris, Heather, thank you so much for busting pencils with us tonight. And yeah, you hear it. Know your rights, everybody. Johnny and Tim, when we get back.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
I'm Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I learned about atrial fibrillation the hard way. My symptoms would come and go. Shortness of breath, fatigue. I kept going. Then I got so lightheaded, I couldn't. My doctor said I have AFib, so I'm about 5 times more likely to have a stroke. Other symptoms, irregular heartbeat, heart racing, chest pain, can come and go, but the risk of stroke stays. If you have symptoms, tell a doctor. Visit notimetowait.com.
Sponsored by Bristol-Myers Squibb and Pfizer.
Do you owe back taxes? Call Tax Solutions now and get some help. For a limited time, the IRS offers a tax forgiveness program called the Fresh Start Initiative. Our team can make it easier for you to pay back taxes, avoid tax liens, and get a fresh start.
I call Tax Solutions now, and they got the IRS off my back.
Call Tax Solutions now. 800-281-8193. 800-281-8193. 800-281-8193.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
Busted pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. The number is 855-752-4842. Wisconsin Public Education Network Monday. Super guest there, Johnny, Dr. Chris Saldana. I mean, just really able to take this whole school finance thing, which really is something that can be really weedy and really murky when you get into it and can really turn people off. You know, we say we always talk about my neighbor, but because you know what? There are people out there that need to understand this. And so often when it comes to understanding things related to finance, I think what happens too is that because of the complication, right, people then intentionally make it sound almost like you can't really understand this. And so therefore, as we started the show, Heather's like, you know, when I say a historic, you know, upward investment. Well, the reality is, no, that's not really true, Tim. That depends on who's writing this. It shouldn't have to depend on how you put the facts out there to get to the truth. The facts should be the truth. The reality around school financing, what we're hearing here is that, man, we're not really talking about the truth, but what Dr. Saldana did for us is really help and say, okay, wait, truth. Real estate taxes, property taxes, we pay for those, sure. There's a certain amount of money, though, that we can give. You know, you have a $100,000 house, you have a $1 million house, figure it out. And then the state says, we want to educate all kids. We want to educate all students with learning difficulties, all students with different disabilities, all students, despite regardless of what their parents bring to the table. And then we set a standard and then we say, okay, this is how much money it's going to cost. And then state, it's the law for you to fill in the gap that's missing there. And what we're hearing is that, you know, so when you hear referendums, no, the state didn't do their job. They broke the law. The state broke the law and didn't follow the Constitution.
Yeah, Tim. And it's great that our guests tonight pointed out schools are backed into a corner. Referendums are, I like that Heather said, you know, they're Band-Aid on a fatal bleeding wound. And so, you know, here we are, we're a school or we're a district that we don't have the budget or the money to keep schools open, to keep schools even adequate, not excellent, but adequate. And so referendums become an imperative to just get by. And that's being backed into a corner. And I like what they both said when I asked them what the move was, right? So listener out there, let's recap that. It's legislative. It's advocating not only do we need to vote for these referendums as a short-term fix, but we need to hold our legislators accountable to actually supporting public schools, right? To them having a legitimate long-term plan that upholds what Chris, you know, Dr. Saldana shared today with us, which is important, is it's constitutional law in the state. But think about it like this. It's a promise. Right. And in democracy, trust is a core democratic value. And we ought to be able to trust our government. And so it is up to us as voters and the public to hold our legislators accountable to being trustworthy, especially when it comes to education. That is a nonpartisan issue. Whether you identify as a Republican or a Democrat or somewhere in between, you know, we all ought to land on, hey, these are public schools. This is an absolute essential. This is a baseline. Let's fund them adequately at the state level so we don't have to parse this out and fight about it, where those who are in the position to not be able to give the most are asked the most. It's absolutely, you know, as someone guest last Monday said, she was talking about assessment backwards. I'll borrow from her in that first three letters of that first word, assessment backwards, right? So, it, you know, it really doesn't fit in well. And I like that they reminded us we need short-term support and long-term plan. And so, listener out there, that's really important. The other thing that I thought was really helpful is they pointed us to where, as a listener, if I'm vibing with this, I'm like, this is really clear. How do I help? Well, if you're not in Wisconsin, you know, if you're in Wisconsin, connect with the Wisconsin Public Education Network, WPEN. But there is a national organization, right, for public education, right? And we, you know, they have a great resource within their materials about, you know, the NPE.
The network. The
National Public Education, Network for Public Education. And they have a local, state, and national grassroots education network on their website. You can find your state. You can click on it. You can see the organizations doing the kind of work like our guest Heather was doing and that Dr. Saldana spoke to tonight. But if you're in Madison, Tim, you can head down to the Minocqua Brewing Company and you can...
You know what? You can get your beer there. You know why, Johnny? Because Busted Pencils is sponsored by the Minocqua Brewing Company, who sued the state of Wisconsin to end its parasitic voucher system that hurts public schools. Minocqua Brewing Company is making Wisconsin great again, one beer at a time. Check out MinocquaBrewingCompany.com to see where you can buy their progressive beer. Grab a beer, sit down there, and put together a game plan while you're at the Minocqua Brewery about saying how we're going to get out the vote here to the reality of saying, like, yeah, Johnny, the responsibility in a democracy then is if the people who are supposed to represent you, your group, okay, remember, we live in a representative democracy. The reality here then is that people are supposed to represent the sense of the people who elected them. When that doesn't happen, the people that elected them then get to go back and say, sorry, you're out. We're putting someone back in. And what a great place to do that at the Minocqua Brewing Company's tap room in Madison. You can get together, you can organize groups, and then go out and do a little bit of knocking on the door. Get that vote out because, look, we're talking about truly upholding the law. Johnny, you pointed out, and this not just in Wisconsin, in every state, public education is a constitutional absolute. It's not a negotiable. It has nothing to do with whether you want to or not. It is the law. Okay. And yeah, with
don't
that
be a
law,
promise breaker. Don't be a promise breaker. So that's that simple. You make a promise, and whether you made that promise individually or collectively by joining the government, right? Because it is constitutional. So when you take that oath to represent whatever district or wherever you're elected to be a representative of, you've taken on that responsibility to advocate for public education. So don't be a promise breaker, right? So legislators, don't be promise breakers. Folks out there, listener, don't vote for a promise breaker. Demand action, right? Fully leaded education talk, Busted Pencils. It's Monday. We got a great week ahead of us. Tim, it's good to chop it up with you tonight.
I always love being here, Johnny Lupinacci. Yeah, man. Trending news Tuesday, Educators Amplified Wednesday. A special guest from Idaho on Thursday. Yeah,
Idaho.
Bring your baked potato with you on Thursday. See y'all tomorrow night.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. Pat Kreitlow.
Tuesday morning, Matt Rothschild retired from the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, but he's still busy here at Civic Media. We'll tell you how.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6. Matt Mayer on air.
Dr. Karen Tamarius, she's a political psychiatrist, and we're talking about how to talk to people with which we do not agree.
Think of the mind as a rider on an elephant. The conscious part is the rider, and the emotional part is the elephant. If you want the person to change their mind, you need to talk with the elephant, not the rider.
Matt Maher on air, weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.